Well, hey, cousins, you are listening to Revolutionary Hood Rat with Kim Young of Dope Black Social Worker, and welcome back. Not just welcome back, but also happy Social Work Appreciation Month. March in the United States of America is Social Work Appreciation Month. So, like, shout out to us. I'm really excited for this March. Honestly, it feels good. Like I've been saying for a couple of years now, just like the branding of the profession of social work, the marketing behind the profession of social work, who is visible in the field and who is not visible in the field, who is platformed in the field and who is ignored in the field. There's so many things that are shifting and I have been noticing them, and I'm just kind of curious if other people are noticing these shifts as well. Like, it shifts for the better, I think, for the profession and getting back and much closer to its roots and beginning to center more Black and brown folks in this field. Like, a big part of what I do with my brand and with the company of Dope Black Social Worker, one of the three tenets is to increase the visibility of Black social workers. And I'm really thinking of more ways that I can do that. I definitely use Revolutionary Hood Rat, the podcast, as an opportunity to increase the visibility and center the stories and experiences of Black and brown folks in this work. And I'm honored, like, right, to be able to have this platform and leave something behind when I eventually step away from this field in the way that I have known it. So happy Social Work Appreciation Month. I'm really hoping that people take an opportunity to uplift, center, shout yourself out, like talk your big shit about identifying as a practicing social worker, engaging in this work, remaining critical of our field and all the ways that we harm, but then also really paying attention to the ways that we have the ability and the power to create and do so much good for others and for ourselves. And so shout out to us for that. Let's go ahead and jump into the revolutionary news for the week. And so when I'm recording this podcast at this moment in time, in Virginia, you know, we have House Bill 606, which is to create the licensure alternative pathway that does not require the ASWB examination. And so at the time that I'm recording, the bill made it out of the House into crossover. So now it's in the Senate, and it has currently been assigned to a committee that we're hopeful we can get it reassigned to one that makes greater sense for where this bill should be heard by legislators in the Senate. I will make note that the Association of Social Work Board is not in support of this bill. They have reached out to the delegate that is patroning the bill to express their thoughts and concerns about the legislation. But truth be told, all their thoughts and concerns are, they just make no goddamn sense. I'm just have to say it like that. Like, the stories don't hold, the facts don't align. It's very hypocritical in terms of their talking points of why they do not support this exam. I mean, support this alternative that would provide a pathway, not eliminate the exam, but provide a pathway that does not require the exam. And it's going to be a fight. It's already been a fight for sure, but I can certainly feel, and those that I'm organizing alongside and working with can feel, from this moment, getting it out of the Senate, it's gonna be a fight. And so I will do everything that I can and continue to do to keep y'all informed on what we got going on. So that's where we are with House Bill 606 here in Virginia. Let me go ahead and introduce our guest for the week. So our guest for the week is Oladera Adeyeyo. And Oladera is a TikTok baddie, but beyond that, she is also a mental health therapist and the author of Self-Care for Black Women and Affirmations for Black Women, a journal. She's passionate about helping people, especially Black women, improve their overall wellness. Before becoming a licensed clinical social worker, Oladera worked as a writer and editor. She has been an associate web editor at Cosmopolitan and managing editor of XXL, and she currently lives in LA. Y'all, I'm excited to be able to offer this conversation to folks who are dreaming and aspiring to think about pivots into the field and outside of the field, because for Oladera to have gone from like being a journalist baddie, but also being an author, and then finding her pathway into the field of social work and then becoming licensed as a clinical social worker, I think it's a true testament to what is possible for us when we can dream bigger and imagine more for ourselves within this field and outside of it. So let's go ahead and dive into this conversation with Oladera. All right. So
Yeah. It's like, I love it when things can get from social media. This is not, I don't even consider like podcast conversations like in real life, but it's the idea of like when something gets from social media into a space like this, like, oh, like the world is really working and it has so many ways for us to connect. So y'all, I'm really excited to have Oladera in here on the pod, here on the podcast. And so
Yeah.
welcome, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Kim. Lovely to meet you
Yeah,
virtually.
I know, still virtually. We're gonna get into a couple of different things, like some of our similarities, as well as just hearing more about your story. Because one of the primary reasons that Revolutionary Hood Rat exists is to increase the visibility of Black and Brown folks in this work. And I want to do that through storytelling, right? Because oftentimes, and as you know from going through your education programs as a social worker, we get erased and left out of what this field is, and then it makes it really difficult for us to see ourselves in it. And I think your journey, even though I don't know the full one, and we're going to hear about it now, but just the bits and pieces I've been able to pick up on, it's like, oh no, like people need to hear how you went from that to this, and then wherever you're headed to next. And so, let's really start with your pathway and journey into this work. How did you end up as a social worker?
How did I end up as a social worker? It's a long story,
Tell me.
but it starts maybe, maybe I think 8 years ago is when it started,
Okay.
the journey. At that time, so like 2016, I was working at XXL as the managing editor. And it was hip hop magazine, and it was life was glamorous. And so my first degree is in journalism, and that's kind of the path I thought I was going to take. I thought I would stay in journalism. I thought I would stay in working maybe fashion, beauty. But I somehow found myself managing a bunch of editors at a hip hop publication and hating life. So I got burnt out. I got burnt out
Yeah.
by the industry. So prior to working at XXL, I had worked at Cosmo. I had been an intern at Teen Vogue. I had done all these lovely magazine internships, Marie Claire, 17 magazine. So I was really like set on being a magazine editor because I am a millennial. I grew up on magazines.
Yeah.
I'm like, I love magazines. But you get into industries. I think you get into industries as we'll get to social work. You get into industries and you realize, oh, why is everything white? Woman-centered. Why do I not feel like I'm supposed to be here? So I experienced a lot of racism, and well, I don't say a lot because my time at Cosmo, the beginning of the first half was great. I had great coworkers, but then came a manager towards the end of my stint where she just, I don't know, didn't see me, see how fit I fit in there. She didn't see how I fit in there, and I was just kind of like, okay, I guess my path is going to stop here. I was experiencing being left off of projects. I was experiencing changed work hours. I was experiencing just basically my pitches for stories being ignored, being told I needed to do one thing to fulfill my role, and then another goal is required for me to fulfill my role. And so I just could tell that they were trying to ice me out, even though I was an asset, I was a pet. And then all of a sudden I became a threat to someone who I once had admired in the industry. And so around that time, when I was working at Cosmo in 2013, my mom had also passed away. She got sick, had an autoimmune disease, and just never got better. And she fell ill. So here, my mom died. I decided I'm gonna leave the magazine. Well, I decided I was gonna leave Cosmo, and I was like, I don't even know if I still want to do magazines and journalism, but I also like need to pay my student loans, and I got bills to pay. So I was like, all right, I guess I'll freelance, right? I don't know. But that didn't really pan out how I wanted it to. And I ended up working in like fashion or beauty PR with social media. And then I quickly realized that I didn't want to do that. And I landed back in publishing at XXL. So now I'm at XXL. I'm like, living a glamorous life with interacting with rappers and whatever.
And but I'm overworked. I'm in this space again where I'm like, I'm overworked, I'm underpaid. My hours are like 12-hour days, sometime over the weekend. And I just remember being upset. I was crying every day. I didn't want to go to work. And I had friends around me at the time who were like, okay, well, if you don't want to do this, like, do something else. And I think I didn't feel like that was an option. I really thought like, oh, well, I've got to stick this out, you know, because I have bills to pay and whatnot. But I had friends who were entering other careers. I had been working or well, volunteering at a church at the time. It was called Hillsong New York, which
Well, we know about Hillsong because, I've been watching some documentaries.
we will get to that, okay? Because I went through religious trauma as well because of that. But so I was like a kids pastor at the church, and like so I was like, okay, well, maybe I want to be a teacher. I love working with kids. And I think I just up and like one day I was in a meeting with just a boss going absolutely crazy at my editors. The next day I was like, yeah, the next 2 weeks are going to be my last time here, because I just
Let's
was like,
go, yes.
I'm like, why is a grown woman yelling at it? And like, so I quickly realized that is the industry for magazines. Well, I don't know. It could be other workspaces as well, where it's just like the bosses are very like just neurotic and crazy and demanding. And so I was just like, why am I here? And so I was like, let me just leave, which I'm an air sign, I'm an Aquarius. So one thing I'm gonna do is leave, which
Float on,
sometimes
y'all gonna float on.
just float on, which is good and bad, because sometimes it can be impulsive, but I'm also like, it's gonna work out. It has to work out. Like, I can't be here. But on top of that, like my health wasn't good. Like my health wasn't good. I had gained weight. My face is riddled with acne. Like I just was not happy. I wasn't getting sleep. Oh, it was bad. So I left and I decided, let me go work with children. Let me see if I want to be a teacher. I quickly realized I don't want to do teaching. That is a special skill set.
Isn't it though?
Not for me. I like to teach maybe adults, but children, no. And so I like worked at a daycare, and then I was like, let me go back to a job I enjoyed, and it was nannying. I enjoyed babysitting, nannying. And so then I was like, you know what? Let me do that while I figure out what my next step is. And in between that, my girlfriends were like, why don't you try social work? And one of my girls was getting ready to get her master's in social work, and she was like, I think you might fit in this field. And I was like, I don't know. I don't want to be taking babies from people. Like, that's not my vibe. Like, I'm not trying to do that. She's like, no, you can like be a therapist. Like, you can do all these things. And I was like, oh. So I basically decided to start exploring the industry. And I also was like, I'm not gonna get my GRE. I'm not gonna do all that,
Hello.
because a lot of the programs require that.
Social work
And
does not.
yeah, okay.
That's why I'm
Why do I
here.
need to take a statistics exam to get into this program? So I was just like, I'm not doing that. I don't want to do that. And so USC, University of Southern California, was like one of the top 15 schools, and they don't require much. Well, they don't require you to take an exam. And so yeah, so I like looked at the program, I visited California, I fell in love, and I was like, okay. I was like, God, like if you get me into this school and you get me the scholarship I'm applying for, then I guess I'm moving to California. And that's what happened. So
So even hearing, thank you so much for, see, it wasn't long. That was good. I have so many like follow-ups and thoughts and questions as you were talking about your life in the world of publishing. I couldn't help but visualize the other Black girl. Have you read the book or watched the
haven't read the book.
Hulu?
I haven't read the book. Because like I own it, but I haven't read it. I have a tendency to buy books and then like not read them. But so I haven't read it, but I was watching it and I was just like, oh,
I
interesting.
was
This is
like,
brilliant.
you got it sounding like it's real. Like that's a real situation. So that was the first thing I was like, oh, not with her living the other Black girl life. And what another thing that popped out for me is I've had a couple of, I call them cousins on the podcast with me, and nobody to this point has shared the reason they got into the field of social work is because they dreamed about becoming a social worker. Like everyone thus far that I've talked to, my story included, like you fell into the work. And I often highlight that because when I hear from like white folks who get into the work, they talk about how they maybe had a dream of wanting to become a social worker or help people or this, that, and the third. But to this day, I have not come across, I'm not saying they don't exist, but like I have not come across like Black and Brown folks that had dreams of doing this work. Like we literally just fell into it. You know what I mean? And like, there's something there. I don't know what's going on with that. But I also think it speaks to the people who fall into the work are the ones that I tend to like the most. I'm not even gonna lie to you. Like, because you kind of come into it and you're not as just conditioned in the ways of how you think you should engage with this work or how you should identify or practice as a social worker. But like, you're really trying to figure out what this field means to you and how you can use it to your benefit. And like, I heard that out of your story. And the last thing that bubbled up for me, and I've been saying this for maybe 3 years, is journalists and therapists ask some of the best questions. like journalists and therapists are some of the best question and like askers that are probably on this planet. And I think it's really dope that you have like this bridging connection between journalism, right? And then transitioning to a therapist. And I'm like, oh, both of them feels like they know how to.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I definitely feel like the journalism field, like it, because I had to write, you know, so many articles a week and had to interview people. Like, yeah, it's like my interview skills, I use them in therapy, try to get more and understand more. And also probably why I'm so like, I like being a therapist, because I'm like, tell me more.
Like,
you know, like.
Please tell me more. So I do want to take a moment and even kind of talk about some of the challenges, differences, and similarities between social work and journalism. Like, what do you kind of see?
Well, okay. I would say they're both demanding in different ways. I definitely feel like, journalism is more demanding of your time, but social work is more demanding of like your spiritual, emotional being. And they both don't start off paying well. but they definitely both ask, like in the role, they ask you to just kind of like be inquisitive with your subject, being inquisitive with your work. So I think that that's how they kind of align.
I can even hear that in how your story was building up for the transition into social work. I was like, I don't know, I can see how this is not as difficult or wild as somebody on the outside, like, well, journalism and social work, how that work? Oh, no. Like that actually makes sense.
It informed like my books, like it's also why like my publishers found me. They were like, hey, you used to be a journalist and also now you're a social worker, we feel like you might be the perfect person to kind of put this kind of work out. So
let's talk a bit about that, right? And so you're a social media influencer baddie, like on the tick of talks. Well, you know, it's very strange, and maybe you can help me. But like,
it's a strange place.
It's a very strange place. It's a very strange place. So like for you, I know TikTok kind of seems like where you have your greatest audience or attention, with like about almost 140 folks have eyes on you, 40K folks have eyes on you on TikTok. What are some of just the highs and the lows of content creation and social media influencing? And how'd you fall into it? Because I'm going to tell you, like, that shit happened to me by accident. I didn't set out to do none of this. It was all
I will say similar. Like, I didn't seek out being an influencer. I almost feel like it's a byproduct of just me, my work. But also because I was a journalist and I used to be a web editor and I used to be online, you know, pre-influencing, and I was an editor. So it was like, I was an influencer. So like, I kind of was navigating the internet space before, you know, people were having millions of followers. And so, you know, the way I navigate it often is like, I often look at my followers as audience, which audience and community. So like, I say audience in the sense of like, I never take things too personal. When people comment things, I may engage I like to engage with my community. Oh, I'm sorry, my teapot is still on.
Oh, go ahead.
Wait, let me turn it off.
We can, yeah, we can edit that. You good?
I'm sorry.
I love your life.
Yeah, it's electric, so like it like will stay warm. Okay. Get lighting back. So I feel like because I was in journalism, I'm able to kind of just step back and not be like, let it take on too much of my mental and emotional well-being. And I'm also very much so like, if I want to take a break, I'm going to take a break. But I view social media as like creating a community. Mm-hmm. So I only put things online that I feel like I want people to engage with, things that I've already processed. You know, I'm never going to come to the internet with a rant if I haven't talked about it with my community yet. Like, you know, because and I'm also like an observer, right? Which comes from being a journalist and an Aquarius.
Are you a February what? Or January?
I'm a January.
Oh, well, happy belated birthday.
Thank you. But so I'm a natural observer, so I love. So with like TikTok, I got on it because we were all like in the pandemic and in 2020, and I was curious about it. And I got on it and I just observed, and I was like, let me just like post stuff and just have fun. And I was working with the Department of Mental Health at the time, and the county job was eating me up. And
been there, done that.
Fun. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. Community mental health. Okay. Not for the week. Valuable lessons, but not for the week.
Not for the week.
Okay. But so I was just make fun content. And I also think that's just my personality. I'm just like, I'm very unserious. And I like to, even in with my clients, I like to infuse humor into my work and just lightheartedness. And so because my work with community mental health was so serious and I was working with people who were severely mentally ill, I was like, when I get online, I'm trying to have fun. I'm trying to let loose. So I think that's what attracted a lot of the audience. And then also, like, I'm a Black girl learning Spanish. So like, I have a huge audience like that on TikTok who are following me, because I share a bit of that journey. And I just like, so it was like I felt into social media influencing. I didn't really like seek it out. And that's also where I come from, because I'm like, as a Black person online, you will be disappointed, because you're gonna see other people around you who may just pop up all of a sudden, and now they've got like millions of followers, brand deals everywhere, and you can easily be like, well, why not me? And so I like to just, you know, go at my own pace and have fun with it and let it grow as it should.
Yeah, I think it is important that more people hear that version of just like the social media space, the content creation and the influencing space, because I don't know if you get these questions or just kind of interest from people asking how they get to where you are. Like, I get those questions. Well, how do I build? How do I? I'm like, child, I don't know. Like, this happened because I'm me. Like, would you?
I get that all the time. People wanted me to mentor them. I'm like, I don't know what to tell you.
Like, I don't know. And if I really wanted to work, like if I wanted to run a scam, because y'all know how badly I could really scam if I wanted to, I could sell so many online courses and digital coaching sessions on how to build your engagement on social media. But, you know, I don't have that in me to do. And so I think it's just important for folks who are just kind of, especially like therapists or mental health people who are finding themselves on these apps, trying to move into an influencer space, people know when you're authentic or not. Like, people are going to gravitate to you, or they're not going to at all. Like, people either dig your message or they don't. Like, and so I think when people put a lot of, when people just put a lot of the wrong energy in trying to build the platform, because you're building it for like selfish reasons or ego-centered reasons or even financial reasons,
profit,
it's just not gonna work the way you would like for it to.
No, I agree. So, I 100% agree. It's like, You're right. I could easily scam people. We could easily be just like, yeah, enroll in my $100 course and I'm gonna show you how to get, you know, 10,000 followers in a yes. month. When really there's no perfect algorithm. There's no, I mean, the algorithms in themselves, we That's don't even know how they fully operate. Yeah. It's a scam. It's a scam. And I think, and if you're Black and brown, it's like, it's, the work is even harder. And I get it because like we're in a capitalist society.
I get it.
People are tired of working these 9-to-5s, especially if you are Black, because you're tired of your jobs mm-hmm. mistreating you. And they see people making extra money. Like, yeah, I've made some extra money
yeah.
through social media. And I'm like, oh, this is nice. But I personally, I'm like, I'm not relying on it.
Right.
It's fun. It's cool to get a lovely check. But I understand like I need to be making money off the platform.
Absolutely.
But I get it. People wanna just get that cash cow.
They do.
There is money there.
There is, but you're right.
People know.
They know. They know. And like
they're not authentic.
And for me, it's more important to have fun. You mentioned having fun a lot when you were talking about like what brought you to your social media platforms. If for me, like if I'm not having fun online, if I'm not sharing the things that I want to share, if I'm not saying the things that I want to say, I'm not going to do it. Like I'm not just posting stuff just to post it. I'm not creating content just to create it. I'm doing it because I want to share it and be in community with people online. And I think people are just missing that when they're kind of seeking to be influencers or content creators.
Right.
I do want to transition a bit because you're not only just a social media content creator, baddie, you're a published author, baddie. And you mentioned just a little bit about how your background in publishing and in the journalism field helped support you getting into this place of having what, 3 published books, right?
Yes.
Let's talk about those books. Let's name those books for people. And let's talk about your life and journey to becoming a published author, because that seems like a part of the checklist. Like when people are like, oh yeah, once I become like I have a brand online, then now I have to have the website. After that, I need to get a book published. After I get the book published, then I can be able to do X, Y, and Z, right? People think it's a checklist. So if we talk a little bit about your journey to being a published author baddie.
Yes. You know, I fell into this book deal. I think God, my mom be looking out. I always wanted to write a book. I actually enjoy writing fiction. So I thought like my first book would maybe be fiction. And that was the route I wanted to go. But, you know, I set my intentions in like, so I'll go back. So 2020, end of 2020, is it 2020? Yes, end of 2020. So there's a Hillsong New York scandal with my pastor.
Yes.
That sends
me. That's the church in Australia, right? Like that's the man. Yes, girl. Yeah, they got 3 documentaries. There's one on Netflix, Hulu, and I think Prime got one. I didn't see them all. Because Justin Bieber was at the church.
But go ahead. Yes. So we'll get it. So like that happened. I spiraled a bit because I grew up in the church and I was just like, wait, what? What do I believe? Like, how am I? So anyway, so then for 2021, I was like, I am set on, you know, I want to write a book. By the end of the year, have a book proposal. I want to, you know, just grow, figure out my faith. I want to take care of me. And so those are my intentions for 2021. And then in March 2021, someone from Simon & Schuster emailed me and was like, hey, like, I want to write this book about self-care for Black women. What are your thoughts on this? And at first I was like, what is this? I was like, this is a scam. This has got to be a scam. Because this does not happen. I get on the phone, I have a meeting, and I'm like, oh, this is actually real. So, you know, in publishing, there are a couple ways you can get a book deal. Sometimes it's like there are publishing houses that look at the market and they think about what books they can put out and they find the authors. And Adams Media is one of those type of publishing houses. And then there are other ways where you write your proposal, you get your agent and you sell your book to the publisher. So when she reached out to me, it was definitely like an aha, like aligned, because when I went into social work school, when I went to USC, I was very intentional. I was like, you know, in my tape for my scholarship, I was like, I want to focus on Black women and Black people and their mental health.
I love it.
This is why I'm coming to social work. I want to learn more about ways I can help my community. And then when I was in getting my master's, and we would always have different type of assignments, and they'd be like, study whatever you want, research whatever you want. And you know, when you're in school, like that's when you have access to all that research. Yeah. And so I would always look at what are the studies on Black women, Black girls, Black people, our health, our wellness. And so I saw the link. I saw the link between the stress and the racism and the weathering on our health. And then I also saw our resilience and the ways we cope and all the things we do to manage our wellness. And so that just made me fuel my fire. And then also thinking about my mother, who, you know, I feel like passed untimely because she lived a very stressful life and was a woman who didn't really take care of herself the best. And I had taken that on. And so then I had learned how to not take care of myself very well, be at jobs longer than I shouldn't have, you know, just not do the best. And so, you know, now that I was in school, I was 3,000 miles away from home in New Jersey. I was in California, but 3,000 miles away from my family in New Jersey. Yeah. And I was finally on my own self-care journey. And I was doing all these things, learning about myself. It was just a powerful journey being in social work school and also like just learning more about myself and figuring out what works for me. So when I graduated and now I'm working, and then Simon & Schuster reaches out, and I've already kind of gone on this journey, and they're like, we want to write this book, some self-care tips. We feel like because you've worked for Cosmo, you can do this. I was like, okay, this is great. And you know, I had my girlfriends were like, yes, you're taking the book deal. And I was like, well, I want my book deal to be a fiction novel. And they're like,
my girl.
She's like, you're not taking this. Okay, like, get over
be for
that.
Real. Yeah.
Be for real. She's like, you're gonna do it. You're gonna get it done.
Yeah.
Stop being foolish. And I think sometimes we can think of, we see how our life should be. Yeah. Like, and we think, well, you know, we see an opportunity and we're like, I don't know, it doesn't really fit correctly. But so, you know, it was great. I wrote the book. I, you know, talked to my girlfriends and I thought about what I had done, and it was the first book, Self-Care for Black Women, and it's Self-Care for Black Women, 150 Ways to Radically Accept and Prioritize Your Mind, Body, and Soul. Mm-hmm. So we had split the book into three, and so and that was intentional. When they had come to me, they were like, how would you want this book to be? So when I came back and I was like, well, we can split it into three and we can give different tips for each section. Mm. And, you know, as a social worker who also believes in accessibility, I also believe in practical resources. And so that's why the first book is very like practical. It's very like reminding yourself to do certain things just to take care of your wellness. And as the book went out and I began to talk to other women, it was like, yeah, a lot of women had never thought about just, you know, playing with a puppy for 20 minutes uninterrupted to de-escalate the stress in their body. And so that book, and then the next book is Affirmations for Black Women, a journal, which now we were thinking of how can we put into practice. And I love affirmations and journaling. I will say this is my favorite book out of my three children, because affirmations were a very critical part in my self-care journey of just like changing the way I thought about myself and really believing myself and pushing me further towards my goals. And as a writer, I've always journaled. I've journaled since I was a kid. You know, I've always had a diary. And I really recognize how journaling had really helped me process my emotions, really reflect on my life. And then it's also been great to look back and look at where I was and reevaluate and, you know, praise myself for my growth. And so it felt like the perfect book to put together, especially for people who were just really struggling with like trying to create a life that they love and also seeing themselves differently. Yeah. And then the third book, Mind, Body, and Soul, a self-care coloring book for Black women, is also another self-care activity. And so that one is in collaboration with Tess Armstrong, who is the artist who designed the first book. And she also helped design for the second book cover. And so it just felt like, okay, well, we're in this space now where more coloring books for adults are out and more representation is needed. And it just felt like a really fun space. And I also really enjoyed Tess's art. And I thought it would be really cool to see how she would imagine my affirmations in her own fantasy world. And so, yeah. And coloring is a great self-care activity, you know.
It is. The coloring book, that's the one where I believe your publisher had reached out and they sent me a copy of the book. Child, I had to fight my mama. Because my mama loves coloring, but I said, baby, that's not yours. I'm going to have to get you your own. Because to your point, like all of the work is phenomenal in your timeline of just being really deliberate and intentional about where you were and like opening yourself up to the possibilities of like what you could do. And then having good people in your circle to be like, girl, you might have a vision, but let me tell you something, you about to mess up because you're not paying attention.
Okay.
To be able to receive what is for you.
Yes.
And I think all of those things are a testament to who you are, how you move in the world, but also just the freedom that it seems like you're giving yourself to figure things out while having, you know, some loose ideas of what you're trying to do and where you're trying to go. And I'm bringing that up because there's so many people, and myself included, like as a recovery and overthinker, I stopped doing that shit a long time ago. Like having plans for everything. Like come across a lot of people. Yeah, you could be deliberate. You can write things down. You can have intentions. You can set goals. But if you don't know how to pivot your plan or be open to receiving what's for you and then letting go of what you once thought was for you, maybe it's not for you anymore. Mm-hmm. You got to let that go to make room for what you're supposed to be receiving. And it just kind of seems like you're going through your own journey and process of unlearning and relearning. Falling in love with yourself for like who you are and where you're, you know, sitting and settling in that moment has really opened yourself up to these things.
Yes, yes.
And so just wanting more Black women, you know what I mean? Like to do that. Because when we don't do that, that's when we end up sick and stressed.
We end up sick. We're at a job we hate for 20 years, but we've made up some reason in our mind. We've convinced ourselves we have to stay put in this relationship, in this job, in this state, in this country, because we, whatever reason, when really you can pivot. There's power in the pivot.
Ooh, and so much.
I'm a person who will pivot because I'm licensed and I've only been licensed for a year. But when I bought my book, when I wrote my book, I was still working on getting my license.
Yeah.
And, you know, and many people may feel like, well, you can't really dish out, you know, advice and guidance to people unless you're licensed and blah, blah, blah. But like, if I had allowed that thought to stop me, you know, who would have known how many women I wouldn't have touched, right? So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, lived experience counts for so much that we don't want to give it the same voice and place. I believe it counts for much more than a license could for a lot of these situations. And so shout out to you for like pushing through that and hopefully and likely encouraging other folks who are thinking that they have to wait until they get a license or wait until they get the next checkbox to do the next thing. Mm-hmm. That's just not the case. That's just not the case. And at any moment, if you feel like myself included, I didn't quit jobs without having other jobs. I didn't move across the country. Like similar to you, like leaving California, coming over to Virginia for grad school, because it was something just had to give. Like it was just time to make a transition. And also similar to you, I didn't know nothing about social work, but when I saw they didn't need no GRE, shit, put my little application in. Shipped all my stuff across the country. And at the time, it was cheaper to pay out-of-state tuition in Virginia than it was to pay in-state tuition in California.
I believe it.
So here I am making a life along the East Coast. And I love to be able to have this conversation with people when we're like in an opposite place. I love when folks just move and transition. And so for you, you have roots over here on the East Coast. I believe I heard you mention Jersey. You were also living in what sounds like New York City. And now you're in LA.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I love it. And I'm not coming back to the East Coast. I love it. I love California.
You love California, you love LA. Those are different things.
You know what?
I will die on this hill. Those are different things.
It is different things. I love Southern California. Let me put it up.
Okay, tell the truth, Shane.
I like Southern California. I mean, when it's not raining, the weather, I think that's what keeps me like, oh, it's the weather. And I really just, I don't know. I don't know what it is. I think because I found myself here, you can say.
Yeah.
So maybe there's an attachment to this space.
Yeah.
But I've definitely thought about like living in other countries for a little bit and maybe moving further south. But I
now you kind of are in another country if you live in LA.
I know.
Saying that out loud.
Yes. But like
it's its own world.
Right. It is its own world. But you know, when I go visit like Florida, Miami, whatever, yeah. And even when I go back to the East Coast, I'm like, I don't like this weather. Like yeah. it's not for me. This place doesn't feel comfortable for me anymore. Get me to dry ass LA. Like every time I'm in Miami, I'm like, get me back to dry ass LA.
Nah, that's, you know what, that resonates for me, because the last time I went home to San Diego, I had some of the same sentiments of like, this will be home, but this don't feel like home anymore. Mm. It don't sound like home, it don't look like home, smell like home. Get me out of here. Like I was actually ready to leave. I was ready to leave because I think kind of what you were sharing of being able to find or move closer to knowing who you are and being more comfortable with knowing who you are. You also do, you build an attachment for the place that helped you do that work.
Yes, yes.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And for me, like coming from the West Coast, coming over here to the East Coast, it's like America's Europe in the sense of you can get on the train and like go all kinds of different places and like move around with a bit more ease. When I was at home, I would be in California driving for 12 hours and still be in the same state. Like, this is stupid.
You know what? You're right. I do miss that. I do miss that.
You can't really move around how you can on this side of the country. And I'm really grateful for that. So like, if I just need to switch things up, let me just get on the train. I'm going to Philly this weekend. I'm going to go to DC this weekend. I'm going to go up to New York this weekend. Get in the car, drive for 2 or 3 hours. I'm going to go down to North Carolina and just like, you know, like you could just kind of.
You're right.
I'm not trying to convince you or nothing.
No, you're not.
I'm just letting you know. You know.
I will hop on a plane. That's me. I'm like, I will hop on a plane.
Yeah. Nah, but I have a lot of respect for people who just pick up and leave.
Mm-hmm.
Because you notice, like, have you noticed in some of your own maybe friendship circles or within your family, the people who never leave where they were born and bred, how time is just stuck for them?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I've seen it in family. I've seen it in friends. And their growth is slower. Yeah. You know, there's growth there, but, you know, it takes them a decade to get an aha moment that may have taken me like, you know, a year or less, you know? So, and it's interesting. People have a lot of fear in that. I mean, there is fear in life. There's fear. It's real. Yeah. It can be paralyzing and, you know, make you stop to not want to pursue anything. But, you know, I'm definitely like, I need to get past that fear to freedom. Like, recently I quit working full-time for other people. I quit my community mental health job.
Woo!
Yes. I quit March of last year. And then I went to go work online for a virtual mental health company, which turned out to be worse. Okay. Some of these companies will say
them mental health companies is like more tech forward than really focus on the mental wellness of people. Yeah.
Okay. They're saying they're mental health, but really they're just a tech company.
It's just a tech company.
Like, oh my gosh. It was horrible.
Yeah.
I was like, I should have just stayed in community mental health and hold on as long as I could.
And have fun with like clients and patients in the community and fooling with these people online.
If I hear productivity one more time, Leave me. Yeah. So, and they were like, well, you can become part-time. And I was like, you couldn't pay me $1 million to keep.
I'm like, I'm not staying here.
So I left. And so I was like working for a group practice for a little bit. And I'm just working for myself with my own practice, Darkberry Wellness.
Darkberry, yep.
Yes.
And I love the name. I love the name. Yeah.
Yes. It's called Darkberry Wellness for a couple of reasons. One, in my, 13 years ago, I had a beauty blog called Darkberry Beauty. And it was my own thing. And then I got into the industry, journalism, and I was like, well, I'll just work for these people and I won't need to keep my own thing, which never do that.
Always keep your own thing. Is that the
always
lesson?
Keep your own thing. I let the URL go. Like the website is not my own thing anymore. But it was like a fun beauty blog. Like, you know, I had like 10,000 viewers every month. Wow. So yeah, I let that go. But then also, you know, Tupac has a song in Keep Your Head Up. He's like, the blacker the berry, the sweeter the juice. And so that's just where I come from, the dark berry.
And just
so,
black women. We know what that's about. We know what that's about. All right, I want to round us out with two of my favorite questions to ask folks as we close out. And of course, I have to ask, what does hood rat shit look like to you? Because, you know, I'm all about reclaiming the joys of doing hood rat things, however you see that and however you define that. So what does hood rat shit look like for you?
Hood rat shit to me is me living on my own time. Mm-hmm. So I'm working on my own time. I'm traveling on my own time. If I want to go see my friend who lives in North Carolina, I'm going to see my friend who lives in North Carolina. If I want to hop on a plane to Mexico, I'm going to hop on a plane to Mexico. And not have to put in a time request.
Ooh. Oh, that's big boss hood rat shit.
So, yes, it's like, you know, and also I'm in a season of like something I call not my Wahala. Ooh. So Wahala is a Nigerian pidgin term for problem. And it's a very common term that people say. So much Wahala, like people will use it. And so I'm in a season of like my family and their emotional and mental issues, not my problem. Like I'm making space for me. I'm really taking care of me. So I'm in a season of like, hood rat shit is definitely involved in me prioritizing my own stuff, my own time. And
I love it. I love it. I love it. I'm gonna have to borrow that. Say it again, not my what?
Wahala,
not my Wahala. Yeah, I'm gonna have to borrow that one. Even though, you know, do we have unofficial beef? I've been claimed by Ghanaians. I'm not Ghanaian by any means, but I heard you mention Phyllis Wanaji.
Yeah, there is some beef there, but I like my Ghanaians because they're basically the same people.
Same. We all the same. Y'all just be beefing over jollof rice. I'm like, relax. Relax.
But Nigerian jollof is better.
See, I have nothing. I cannot offer nothing. I'm not involved in this fight. I just eat plain white rice. I'm not involved. There's some Carolina gold rice. It's the best I can do. And the final question that I want to ask, and the reason I asked this question, you've already done a great job, it seems like, thus far in your life, but more people, I believe, need to hear this, is we can always leave this work, and we should leave this work when it's our time, not when it's too late. Leave it when you're up high. Leave it when you're riding the high. Don't leave it when it's too late. And so I love to ask folks, like, when it's all said and done, what legacy would you like to leave behind in this field or in this work?
The legacy that I would like to leave behind in social work is that you can create your own path. Is that you don't have to be broke to be a social worker. And you should not be broke. Okay. And you should not be burnt out. Granted, I feel like it is something that does happen in the field, especially if you do community mental health, but you don't have to. You don't have to do this work burnt out. You don't have to do this work broke. And you can make your own path for it. So,
I love that. I love that. Thank you for your time. Thank you for sharing your stories. Thank you for sharing pieces of you. And how can the good folks find you and engage with all of your wonderfulness?
Yes, you can follow me on social media everywhere. It is my first name, last name, Oludara Adeyo, OluDaraAdeyo. And yeah, that's really it.
I love it. Thank you so much. I appreciate you.
That was good, right? Like, the stories behind Black folks that find themselves into the field of social work continue to leave me in awe and inspired by just our brilliance and curiosity and perseverance to not give up, you know what I'm saying? But like find new ways to evolve and exist and move beyond just trying to live, but like really thrive, like move out of a place of just trying to survive in a country and within systems that don't want to see you for who you are and want to diminish you and keep you small. And so I'm always grateful to be able to hold the space for stories to be told and then have the ability and the platform to share those stories with other people. I'm grateful for each of y'all for continuing to walk alongside me in this journey, support me in ways that I know of and do not know of, speak my name in places and spaces and around tables that I'm aware of and unaware of, and protect me in ways that I'm aware of and unaware of. I truly felt cared for, loved, and supported by this community, and I can only hope that y'all can get a sense from me of just how much I care for and support each and one of y'all, each and every one of y'all, which is why I always say at the end of each episode, the importance of taking care of our hearts so that we can take care of each other, because we are absolutely all that we got at the end of the day. People, that's what we have at the end of the day. And I'm grateful to y'all for being my people. For real, for real. And we shall chat next time. Be well.